Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Read Between the Tracks. My name is Caitlin Cromley Lynn, and I am here with my good friend and co-host, Jeffrey Edelstein.
Hello again.
Hello again. Today, we are talking about an album that is very near and dear to our hearts, and it brings up a lot of memories from freshman year of college. That's when it came out.
Yes.
Today, we're going to be talking about Paramore's classic album, Brand New Eyes.
I love this one.
Which is my favorite, other than After Laughter.
Yeah, this is my favorite, like, classic Paramore album, meaning the original band, the band that blew onto the scene with Riot. And then this was their follow-up albums. The original band, Hayley Williams, Taylor York, Zach Farrow, Josh Farrow, and Jeremy Davis. Before the band started fracturing almost immediately after this album came out, at least maybe a year later in 2010 was when the breakup happened, after they had done the tour for this album. This is a deeply personal album. A lot of the same things that we saw in Fleetwood Mac's Rumors we see in this album in terms of band dynamics. And this is really, like, to me, like, one of the best albums of the early 2010s.
I 100% agree. This album is so fraught with angst and a lot of discord and a lot of anger. So
a lot of disappointment, a lot of sadness, a lot of frustration, but also a lot of Christianity.
A lot of Christianity and a lot of questioning your faith, which I find very interesting because the roots of the band are based in Christianity. They're like a quasi-Christian pop punk band, like very reminiscent of like Reliant K.
Right.
Like, I would say that they were very similar in the beginning to Reliant K. And so, like, for our sources for today were a couple things. I know you and I both watched the Brand New Eyes, like, promo documentary. It's about 30 minutes long. I thought it was incredibly unuseful and terrible.
It was a little forced, too.
It was super forced. It was, and it was so weird to watch because it was essentially like one giant jam session where you see
them
like recording. It is, but like I didn't really get like a ton of insight into how they were as a band. Like, everything felt super forced, as you said. They alternated between talking about how Hayley was absolutely like a genius and how wonderful she was, and then they were like, oh, well, she also had how well they worked together, and then they were also like, oh, well, Hayley had like a lot of these lyrics like talking shit about us, and you know, we had a lot of issues as a band, but we're great now, insert like forced smile.
And
here,
the reputation about the band has always been that it's Hayley Williams and Paramore, that they're her, like, backup band. And the reality is that Atlantic Records had only signed Hayley Williams, and then the rest of the band were not really signed with Atlantic. So it's...
They were almost like contractors.
Right. It was this, like, weird dynamic for the entirety of the band where, you know, Hayley Williams' story is that she didn't want to be a pop singer. She didn't want to be Britney Spears, she didn't want to be Christina Aguilera. She wanted to have this really authentic sound that was true to her. And then she, you know, really, like, this is a high school band. Her neighbor was Jeremy Davis when she lived in Franklin, Tennessee. They got together, they started playing together. She met the Farrow brothers at a homeschooled, like, kind of study group, like kids who were homeschooled at a study group. She met them there. And then, you know, Taylor York joined later after they had started, like, being produced. But, like, this is kind of like a high school band that grew into a major, major player in pop punk or emo punk, emo rock.
Right. And it's crazy because they've all known each other since they were, like, 11, 12, 13.
Well,
right.
Zach Farrow played drums for Paramore when he was 12 on Riot.
Which is crazy. That's like absolutely insane to me. And on top of that, Hayley and Josh dated
for a
little bit, which is very prevalent on this album that they dated and were like struggling to remain friends. The big central theme on this album is trying to grow up with the people that you've grown up with. and how, like, you struggle to do that, and, like, how you're trying to navigate knowing people since you were 11, 12, 13, and now you're in your 20s, and you're highly successful, and there's all these, like, different dynamics. Like, you have Haley and Josh, who dated and are now broken up and are trying to navigate that. And trying to navigate that as, like, a normal human being is hard enough. And now you're forced to stay in this band
and
with
tour.
This person and tour. And we'll talk about this later. You come to find out that, like, the Farrow brothers were especially angry about how Haley was kind of put on this pedestal by the record company, and how the rest of the band was kind of pushed aside in their eyes. So yeah. There's a lot of fracturing, as you said.
But on a personal note, like, this is an album that came to us right as we became friends. We had
yes.
met already, because we had started at Drew, like, maybe 3 days after my birthday, in August. And it was like, when I heard this song, I think I heard Only Exception on the radio or something. And I was like, oh, I have to buy mm-hmm. this album. And I think I didn't buy it yet. I think I got a burned copy of it, and I listened to that. Or I might have found it on, like, iTunes or something. But, like, this was, like, an album that really resonated with me as somebody who was giving up all of his high school friends to go to college.
Oh my
right?
gosh, same, like, same.
Even
yes.
though I wasn't in love with anyone, I was still like, wow. And then all the drama, the following year was really interesting as well. And we'll get into some of that.
Right. And before we just do a deep dive, I kind of want to get into my
Go
personal
for it.
Story with this album. So same thing. We were starting college around this time when this album came out, and I was going through so much transition. The day before I left for college, my high school boyfriend and I broke up. Like, literally, I'm packing my bags, and we broke up the day before I left for college. So that was part of my life as I was entering college. I also had, like, the same core group of guy friends that were very essential to my high school friend group, and navigating us, like, staying together as a group and trying to navigate my breakup and just all these crazy transitions I was going through, being off on my own at college for the first time. I leaned on a lot of these songs on this album as a crutch, because yes. they were a lot of the themes that are in this album I related to so much. And once we get into the tracks, I think we'll both be able to talk about, I guess, our own personal stories that tie yeah. to these. So I think with that, we can get started. So track one is Careful, which is such a great opener, such a great opener that... It's a banger. It's a definition of a banger. And we already, from the get-go, get the cynicism that you see a lot on this album. So, Jeffrey, you want to get yes. into some of the lyrics here?
So just yes. to remind our audience who maybe hasn't listened to this album in a while, most of it is some of the best pop punk ever. You hear the guitar riffs, you hear the deep chords, and then above that is Hayley Williams's famous 4-octave soprano soaring above it. So for those of you who haven't listened to the album in a while or haven't listened to it yet, this is like a huge opener. And as usual with all of our albums, please go and listen to them. Listen to our show, you know, either before or after you listen to these albums. We want you to take that away, that these are, like, wonderful, beautiful things that need to be appreciated. So verse one, I settled down a twisted up frown, disguised as a smile. Well, you know, you would have never known I had it all, but not what I wanted, because hope for me was a place uncharted and overgrown. You'd make your ways in. I'd resist you just like this. You can't tell me to feel. The truth never set me free, so I did it myself. The chorus.
Those two lines. Oh my God. Can we
Let's
just talk about those two lines for a second?
Before we hit the chorus.
Yes. The truth never set me free, so I did it myself. I have to tell you, as a 30-year-old now listening to this album, I have such a newfound appreciation for this. I think Hayley Williams was like maybe like, because I think she's our age, so she was like 19 or 20 when this album came out. And to have that sense of like just facing your truth and taking matters into your own hands at that age, I have so much admiration for that. And at the same time, though, she's so biting. Like, there's clearly a lot of bitterness in that first part of the
and
song.
And you get some of that candy moment. Like, you know, because when we think of the songs on Riot, there's always this, like, smirk. Whenever I think of her, her lyrics, I think of those stickers that used to come. You could get them at like Hot Topic or Spencer's. They were the bunny that was like always saying awful
things. Happy Bunny. Happy bunny.
I always think of her lyrics in conjunction with that. Because like, I settled down a twisted up frown disguised as a smile. Like she's really like reflecting on this idea of the upside down frown. And this like really biting, like I'm going to pretend this works because it's bullshit. And then when we get to this beautiful, the truth never set me free, so I did it myself, is, I think, a really brilliant moment where who knows what's beyond the truth, right? We always talk about truth and lies. And here we have an idea that there is something beyond the power of truth to liberate you from something, from a situation that you hate. And then we have the chorus, you can't be too careful anymore. When all that is waiting for you, won't come any closer, you've got to reach out a little bit, a little more, 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 more. And that's like, to me, this moment of, I'm stretched to as far as I can with the growth in my life, with maybe the anchors of the people around me. And I have to strive for something more because it won't come closer to me. I'm not going to be given anything else.
Right, or like you're afraid to let your guard down and you're trying to let it down, and it's that kind of like coaching yourself, like you just gotta like push yourself a little more, like just a little more. Like it sounds like it's like a self pep talk kind of.
Definitely.
And when we get into verse 2, open your eyes like I opened mine. It's only the real world, a life you will never know. Shifting your weight to throw off the pain while you can ignore it for only so long. So she's talking to this other person of like kind of trying again to like coax them out of this bubble that they've put themselves in. Again, we see that theme of trying to grow beyond like who you used to be, or like the people you used to surround yourself with, and getting out of your comfort zone. And there's that, the last two lines, well, you can ignore it, but for only so long. It's like, you can stay in like your fantasy world, but it's gonna catch up to you that like you have to come back to reality.
Yeah, and then we lead into the next pre-chorus. You look like I did, you resist me just like this. You can't tell me to heal, and it hurts remembering how it felt to shut down. We have our chorus again, but the pre-chorus there, I think, is a really good moment, where it's more of this like tug and pull, and this sort of like rejection of like, you can't tell me how to be, you can't tell me how to grow as a person, because it then connects with the bridge after the next chorus set. The truth never set me free. The truth never set me free. The truth never set me free. So I'll do it myself. And then we repeat the chorus, and that's the end of the song. So, you know, the idea of the truth here could be a lot of different literal things, right? It could be the truth about someone cheating on someone. It could be the truth about whether someone loves someone or not. But I think there's a bigger idea here, which is that you can't wait for, like, information to be the thing that motivates you to change.
Right. And just to close out this song, Hayley used to keep like a diary that she would share with her fans online. And she said about this song that it's really about like and here's the quote from her, for petty reasons, I lived under a rock in a corner for over half my teenage life. I closed myself off in order to sustain relationships with a limited amount of people. I thought I could keep on their good side if I just did this or that. So I feel like a lot of the themes in the song are about her breaking free from like that teenage idealism and teenage like naivete and really like kind of like pushing yourself to grow up, like kind of getting out of like that Neverland-ish like mindset.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would even say that it like gets you out of that that like instead of naivete, the opposite, that like teenage cynicism and like moping around ism.
Moping around ism, I like that.
And then we have this isn't my favorite song on the album, but this is like maybe this my second favorite song on the album, and it's like, oh my god, definition of banger. It's Ignorance.
Oh my god, this is one of my favorite Paramore songs. I used to play this on a loop.
I'm gonna be controversial here and say I think this is their best like upbeat banger. Like I like it better than Misery Business. I like it better than like other songs that they did that sound like this. I think it has the message is really smart and is really well done. And then let me tell you something. This is the only song that they played from this album when I saw them in 2018 at Boston College.
I didn't even realize you saw them live.
Everything else was from After Laughter.
You say upbeat, though. I think this is one of their angriest
songs.
Right,
but the beat is up.
This is so friggin' angry.
Fast tempo.
Yes. Like, this is like a good workout song. Anyway, so this song is super aggressive. You can almost hear her like spitting with anger, which I'm just like,
it's
yes,
some of her
girl,
best vocal
you
work.
Take them down.
She really goes from this like really like really like not quiet, but like this sort of softer tone to this really intense soprano riff, and it's just so musically beautiful and intense, and it really matches the mood. So let's start with the incendiary first couple of lines. If I'm a
I want to
read
this.
Go for it.
Can I please read this?
Go for it.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so verse one starts off, if I'm a bad person, you don't like me. Well, I guess I'll make my own way. It's a circle, a mean cycle. I can't excite you anymore. Where's your gavel? Your jury? What's my offense this time? You're not a judge, but if you're going to judge me, well, sentence me to another life. Oh my God. Haley Williams is so smart.
Like,
I just love the buildup of emotion. Like, as you said, she goes from quiet, but it's like dangerous quiet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're about to have an argument with someone. Like, it almost sounds like villainous. Like, well, if I'm a bad person,
right,
you don't like me. It's like that very like, oh, like eerie quiet.
To me, it
quiet.
Feels like arguing with a teenager. Like, this is how a teenager talks. Like, as a teenager, this is how I talked. Like, it feels like really connected to the roots of like being a youthful person, and like feeling judged by people, and what you really want to do about it. Do you want to read the pre-chorus?
Yes, I want to read the whole damn thing.
So you're going to read the whole damn
thing.
That's
okay. I'm going to read the whole damn thing. Do we just want to... We can read the whole thing and then I guess dissect it from there. Okay. Don't want to hear your sad songs. I don't want to feel your pain. When you swear it's all my fault because you know we're not the same. And then she shouts, no, we're not the same. Shouts again, no. Oh, we're not the same. Yeah, the friends who stuck together, we wrote our names in blood. But I guess you can't accept that the change is good. Hey, it's good. Hey, it's good. And then Jeffrey's like mouth singing it while I'm reading this. I wish I could do the same. Okay. Chorus. Well, you treat me just like another stranger. Well, it's nice to meet you, sir. I guess I'll go. I'd best be on my way out. You treat me just like another stranger. Well, it's nice to meet you, sir. I guess I'll go. I'd best be on my way out. Before we go any further, can we please talk about what I just read?
Yeah, we have to before we get to the best
half.
Part.
Yes. Okay. So, so much frustration so here. Much. It's so evident. It's so evident. And obviously, this is about issues within the band. And I think specifically with Josh Farrow. And it, essentially, it's about the frustration of watching someone that you love change and not being able to do anything about it. And Haley said about this song that writing this song was the catalyst in which, like, after she wrote this song, they were able to discuss all the band issues that were, like, festering. And at the root of this is really just about, like, growing up and growing apart. You just get that, the not only anger, but that heartbreak of distance. While you treat me just like another stranger, well, it's nice to meet you, sir. So biting. Yeah. The way she sings it, it's, like, so sarcastic. Like, I am so, even all these years later, so impressed by her vocal delivery of these lines. Like, you feel every ounce of anger, every single ounce of it. And I want to go back to the first verses. What do you think of the, it's a circle, it's a mean cycle, like, that whole part. Like, what do you think she's saying?
I think it's
here,
like, arguing over and over again, or like arguing and making peace and then arguing again and agreeing and then disagreeing. And so the reason why I'm saying that, it's like it's like there's this judge imagery right after it where it's like you always have to go back to court, it's never resolved. So like I think the name of the song is Ignorance, and we're going to hear why it's that in a minute. But, like, ignorance is a never-ending cycle. You know, if we think all the way back to Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, we have one of the children that the Ghost of Christmas Present reveals under his robe is ignorance.
Oh, I forgot. That's really cool.
Right, that's like something we had. Yes. I don't think we read that in school, but I read it because of school. But like the concept of ignorance as something that's like this continuous drought on life and humanity, Hayley Williams is picking up on in here.
Well, it also feels like kind of like a schoolyard argument, definitely. Like na 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 na. Oh, for sure.
Which is a musical theme that they had in the previous album, Riot, that they carry forward into this one.
Right. You know, we're not the same. We're not the same. Oh, we're not the same. And then this is clearly about the band. Yeah, the friends who stuck together. We wrote our names in blood. That's intense. That's like a pact.
They were teenagers when they started this band.
I know, but that like so perfectly describes like the intensity of that relationship that they all had. Like she described in that terrible promo documentary, it's like a marriage of five people. That's what she said. And it you get that in this, that it was this marriage of five people and now it's splintering. And it's like that pre-divorce, like cutting anger. Like It's like when you're at like the mediation agreement and you're trying to like separate all your things and you just hate each other. You just hate each other. And you so get that in this. So then let's get to the next part. And so then post-chorus is ignorance is your new best friend. Ignorance is your new best friend. And then verse 2, again, like so biting. This is the best thing that could have happened any longer and I wouldn't have made it. It's not a war. No, it's not a rapture. I'm just a person, but you can't take it. The same tricks that once fooled me, they won't get you anywhere. I'm not the same kid from your memory. Now I can fend for myself. And then it goes into the pre-chorus again about the sad songs and we wrote our names in blood. So let's talk about that verse, the verse 2.
I think the lines that stick out for me is, I'm not the same kid from your memory. Well, now I can fend for myself. I mean, this must have been interesting for Haley. I mean, she's one girl in a group of like four other guys, and like whatever right. their relationships were as teenagers, they must have been a little, I don't know, uncomfortable, right? Like, and I'm not saying like this in a When Harry Met Sally kind of way that men and women can't be friends, but more of a like, what was the dynamic like? And I'm sure a lot of it was because Hayley Williams has a contract with Atlantic, and because I'm sure the record company is looking at her as the one who they can sell, you know, that gives her a certain amount of power. But then again, she's outnumbered gender wise, but is also the vocalist. So there's weird power dynamics here.
She's the front woman. The same tricks that once fooled me, they won't get you anywhere. And I feel like this references Careful, yes, as well. Like, I'm like, how she's growing up while they're changing for the worst. Like, there's that definite line drawn in the sand. Like, I've grown. You just get this sense of heartbreak and anger that whoever she's speaking to, I'm guessing it's Josh, they're totally disconnected to the point where she's angry, she's upset. And yeah, I played this song on a loop all the time during my first few months at college. As I said, I was dealing with a lot of transition at that time, and I thought of like my ex-boyfriend a lot when I was listening to the song. He was a part of our friend group and was going through a lot where he was like kind of separating himself from me and from us. And I feel like this captures like a lot of what I was going through at the time so perfectly. I used to listen to this song a lot while I was writing. What else do you think about this song?
You know, my personal connection to the song is just like, I would put this on when I was like really upset, and I would feel so much better listening to it. I was going through a really rough time, like,
right,
in college. Like,
oh, I remember. I had a very
bad roommate. It was very bad. And so I was...
It was a little bit more than bad.
We can't say it on the radio. But the situation was really bad. And then, like, at the same time, I was in this play that I was, like, working too hard on, and it was not fun, and I was also, like, not doing well in class, because it was, like, all of a sudden I had to, like, be smart and have a ton of stress in my life. And so this song, I don't know, the clarity of this, of anger in this song felt so validating. And, you know, I was a kid who didn't listen to a lot of contemporary music.
No, oh, I know you didn't. You're making I know you fun didn't. Of me. I'm being
okay. Fine.
Yeah.
Well, I was somebody who was always like listening to Elton John, Billy Joel, all the classics. But this album,
more shockers.
You know, this album was part of like me like opening my ears to what else was out there, and this was like a really powerful song for me because it allowed me to engage with other people in a different way.
Yeah, no, easily one of my top five favorite Paramore songs.
Definitely,
for sure.
I would say it's my second best, second favorite Paramore song. The other, my favorite, is on this album. So let's move on down the road.
Yeah. So next is Playing God, which is a great scathing song about hypocritical, self-righteous Christians. That's essentially what it's about.
Yeah, it's really interesting how this song resonates. Because, like, I know when I was, like, listening to this the first time as a college student, like, I was like, oh, this is a really, really interesting song to follow up ignorance, because it's about ignorance. And it's also, like, this song is about, like, you can't control everything and control everything in my life. So let me start with some of the lyrics. Can't make my own decisions or make any with precision. Well, maybe you should tie me up so I don't go where you don't want me. You say that I've been changing, that I'm not simply aging. Yeah, how could that be logical? Just keep on cramming ideas down my throat. Whoa. Chorus, you don't have to believe me, but the way I see it, next time you point a finger, I might have to bend it back and break it off. Next time you point a finger, I'll point you to the mirror.
Again, love those lines. Like, she has some great lines in this album. My favorites in this song are the next time you point a finger, I'll point you to the mirror. But just so good. Like, what Hayley Williams is so talented at is, like, getting a feeling within, like, two lines.
Absolutely.
Like, she packs, like, one feeling into, like, a line or two lines most. And she's so good at it. But about this song, she said that this song is ripping at self-righteous people, ripping at my bandmates, and anyone who ever made me not feel good enough. And you definitely see that in this song, but she goes into the verse two, where she finally gets into the God part. If God's the game that you're playing, well, we must get more acquainted, because it has to be so lonely to be the only one who's holy. It's just my humble opinion, but it's the one that I believe in. You don't deserve a point of view if the only thing you see is you. Whoa. So, coming from someone, it seems like in this song, she's really questioning, like, her not necessarily her faith, but, like, the people within her faith who are, like, I guess, to put it plainly, the Bible thumpers. And the people who are hypocrites when it comes to religion. And I mean, coming from someone who grew up, like, very deeply entrenched, like, my parents, like, had me going to church when I was very young. I received all of my sacraments within the Catholic Church up through confirmation. I did youth group. I did CCD, which was, like, Sunday school. And as you get older and you start to, like, question your faith and, like, question, I guess, what you're being taught, a lot of the themes that you see in here, or a lot of the things that you're feeling are seen in, I believe, in this song, where you kind of start thinking, like, okay, well, you're saying this, or you're saying the Bible says this, but you're doing this. And it's just a great song about hypocrites. I just love the next time you point a finger, I might have to bend it back and break it off. Like, that's so wonderfully aggressive.
And
like,
more,
oh my
and
God.
Again, more
I love
like
that
teenage
too.
Imagery with that.
Yeah, it's teenage angst. It's like questioning your faith. It's questioning like hypocrites. Again, like so far, I feel like you have careful, and then ignorance speaks to careful, and I feel like this speaks
Absolutely.
To ignorance. So we keep getting those ties to each of the songs, and I love she never says playing God in this
right.
song, but like clearly this is about someone who like equates themselves to like a godlike complex where they think they know everything about like religion or what's right. So then we get into the bridge before the last part of the chorus. This is the last second chance. I'll point you to the mirror. I'm half as good as it gets. I'll point you to the mirror. I'm on both sides of the fence. I'll point you to the mirror. Without a hint of regret, I'll hold you to it. What do you think of that as like the last part of the closer before the last
I
chorus?
I love that line, the last second chance. That the last second chance is like, I've already given you a number of second chances, and I want you to look at yourself
yeah.
and look away from me. I am not the problem in this. You're the problem. And I will keep pointing you to
right.
the mirror unless I have to break your finger off and make it go to the mirror.
Like, it's you keep looking at me, but you should look at yourself.
Right, exactly.
That's really what this song is saying.
The hypocrites projecting their problems onto her.
Right. It's such a clever
it's a brilliant
song. So incredibly clever. Absolutely brilliant. Again, 19, 20 years old. Absolutely brilliant. All right. So then the next track.
We have Brick by Boring Brick.
I know a lot of like Paramore fans like this song. I don't know. I have like, I think it's fine. Like it's upbeat. I like
yeah,
the beat
is really good. It definitely, like, the music is thematically tied throughout the album. What I think is interesting here is the metaphor, is this is the first song that's, like, mostly metaphor in the album, and it's really, like, different from their other work, where there's not a lot of, like, metaphor. It's a lot of literal stuff. So I'll read the first stuff. She lives in a fairy tale. somewhere too far for us to find, forgotten the taste and smell of a world that she's left behind. It's all about the exposure, the lens, I told her, the angles were all wrong now. She's ripping wings off of butterflies, which we know a butterfly with two butterfly wings ripped off is part of the album art. Keep your feet on the ground when your head's in the clouds. We'll go get your shovel and we'll dig a deep hole to bury the castle. Bury the castle. Get your shovel and we'll dig a deep hole to bury the castle. Bury the castle. So in the first verse and the pre-chorus and the chorus, like, we see these moments of metaphor where we're already comparing the speaker or the speaker's main character to a fairy tale, and that, like, there's too much exposure, maybe pulling us back to our conversations about Fame in some of the other albums we've gone over. And then the pre-chorus, keep your feet on the ground when your head's in the clouds, it's this warning of this wise warning about who you should be. And then burying the castle ties us back to that first line of she lives in a fairy tale. Burying the castle, or essentially like putting the castle to rest, the idea of this fairy tale, of this dream, to rest.
Right. And I think it kind of ties back to careful, because careful is essentially like trying very hard to grow up and grow away and make your own path. And this one is about, I guess, like, it's kind of like an Aesop's fable, where it's the moral of the story is, like, don't get lost in your, like, fantasy. Like, you stay grounded in reality. It's about people who kind of sink into these alternative realities and, like, stay in the clouds in these, like, unrealistic dreams. And you definitely get, like, Alice in Wonderland, like, Neverland vibes in this song, and how if you stay too long, like, things start to go wrong, especially those last two lines in the verse one. The angles were all wrong now. She's ripping wings off of butterflies. So it's almost like the longer that this person stays in this fantasy land, like, they just start to kind of, like, lose their mind a little bit and lose their sense of reality. But I love the metaphor, and I think Haley has talked about in interviews that, like, this really isn't autobiographical. Like, she kind of came up with this story, but it came from, like, I guess, watching her peers around her, like, not really go anywhere, right, or, like, not really, like, stay grounded in reality, which I think is so ironic, because they literally, their whole career is like was following their dreams.
Right. Well,
so I do find the irony,
you know,
in that.
I imagine that, you know, she was homeschooled. What other kinds of friendships did she have? We've already talked about how she was pretty isolative as a teenager, and how, like, there's who is she talking about if it's her friends? And she's talking about her bandmates and herself in relation to them, and that's the whole album is, I mean, these are her lyrics mostly. Like, there's some other credits on these tracks, but the band, everyone in the band really accredits her with the lyric writing. So it's kind of like this song is kind of this moment where she is acknowledging her dream is being fulfilled in some ways, but not others. And we see that in the second verse.
Right. I'll read verse two, which I find super interesting. So one day he found her crying, coiled up on the dirty ground. Her prince finally came to save her, and the rest you can figure out. But it was a trick, and the clock struck 12. Well, make sure to build your house brick by boring brick, or the wolf's gonna blow it down. So great. Brilliant. It's,
I love this idea.
I was just gonna say that it's literally saying build your life in reality. That's where you build your
make
life.
Make it the most
not
boring thing ever, and you'll be okay. And there, you'll be boring it and building it in reality, and not in this world of fantasy, where you'll ultimately have to bury the castle, because, or your dreams will be knocked down or blown down. keep your feet on the ground when your head's in the clouds, our next pre-chorus. This is like a recitation of wisdom. And then we have our chorus again. And then our bridge. Well, you built up a world of magic because your real life is tragic. Yeah, you built up your world of magic. I just want to note the rhyme scheme there. It's not like especially like fancy or brilliant, but I think like magic and tragic. Tragic to me is always something like a teenager. As teenagers, we would say like, "You're tragic." Like we used to say that back in the old days, along with Totes McGoats, right? And Cool Beans, right?
Oh my god, stop it.
Young millennials. Now we're old millennials, I guess.
Oh, please.
So our third verse, if it's not real, you can't hold it in your hand. You can't feel it with your heart, and it won't believe, and I won't believe it. But if it's true, then you can see it with your eyes, oh, even in the dark. And that's where I want to be, yeah. I'd rather be in the dark then deal with something that isn't real.
It's so funny though that she says that, because I immediately, when I heard that verse, she has the song Miracle from their first album, where she has the line, "If it's not faith, if you use your eyes." So it's literally like
the opposite.
It's completely a 180. Inverse. It's a complete 180. Yeah. So it seems that she's like moved away from that like fairy tale idealism. So I'm just gonna say my favorite part of this whole song is the ba 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 da ba ba da ba da 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 da. I love that. That's it. That's like my whole thing on
I like song. That too. So moving on, we have our next song.
Yep.
Which is
another song I like am not like a huge fan of. Yeah, turn it off.
No, we're not gonna turn it off yet.
No, not yet. We'll talk a little bit about it, but I don't have like a ton to say about it. It's, again, it's really just about, it's more like your faith is shaken. Like you see that, and more band turmoil. Right.
So let me read some of my favorite parts. I scraped my knees while I was praying, which I think is like a really great image. Ugh. Like, wow. Like I love one of the things
gut that punch.
I always enjoyed when we were reading like holy texts, like we were reading like John Donne or something like that. One of the things that
I love John Donne,
whenever we were reading like a Christian text, you know, for our audience, if they don't remember, I'm Jewish. I always loved lines that were like about like devotion of Christianity and like, but that's like as a self-sacrifice in this bodily way. And to me, this brought me back to that, to John, specifically John Donne. I scraped my knees while I was praying, but I also love the irony there of this, like, I'm praying and I'm being hurt by it. And found a demon in my safest haven. Seems like it's getting harder to believe in anything than just to get lost in all my selfish thoughts. So there's this like temptation, this demon character. Obviously this is a bandmate, probably Josh Farrow.
Josh.
I want to know what it be like to find perfection in my pride, to see nothing in the light. I'll turn it off. In all my spite, I'll turn it off. Turning off the pride in spite of herself. And the worst part is, before it gets any better, we're headed for a cliff, and in the free fall, I will realize I'm better off when I hit the bottom, which is a really dark image. I'd rather
right,
we're going to die before I can do anything to save us. The tragedy, it seems unending. I'm watching everyone I looked up to break and bending. We're taking shortcuts and false solutions just to come out the hero. We want to be good people, but we're going to do it at any cost. We have a repeat of the chorus and then the bridge. I want to know what it'd be like to find perfection in my pride, to see nothing in the light. I'll turn it off in all my spite. I'll turn it off just to turn it off again. Here we have more light imagery, and then we have a repeat of the chorus. So I like what's going on here. I think it's a little less sophisticated than other songs on the album, but the music is really good. It's another really good, like, musical track.
I was going to say verse one is just mwah, chef's
right.
kiss.
Great, some
chef's
really
kiss
great writing. And
one.
Then it just, I think there wasn't, to me, it doesn't have legs to support that really first great first
yeah.
verse. But anyway.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I really think she's saying, like, in when she's at her angriest, she just wants
right.
to quit. Stop being Paramore. Like, right. that's really what it's the at the heart of this song, what it's about. And especially the chorus. The worst part is, before it gets any better, we're headed for a cliff. And in the free fall, I will realize I'm better off when I hit the bottom. Because when you hit rock bottom, all you can do from there is
right.
go up. Like, so it's even better. It's better when you're at rock bottom, because all you can do, like, is go up from there. And at this point, because they're in the free fall, they're constantly going down. There is no end. So, like, she'd rather hit the bottom, because from there things will get better. And right, because right now things
right.
suck within Paramore. That's what she's saying. And yeah, I just, it's really just about, like, and that I can see behind the curtain. The wheels are cranking, turning. It's all wrong the way we're working towards a goal that's non-existent. It's non-existent. So she's essentially just, like, lost hope that Paramore can continue.
Right.
That's really what the song is about. But you're right. I think, like, it's not as sophisticated, but that first verse, oof, so good.
Anyway, now we get on to what I think is Paramore's best song. And it's my favorite song from them and on this album. And it's the one that everyone knows and loves from this album, The Only Exception.
This song makes me very teary.
I mean,
teary.
I have to tell you, I can't believe this song is like, real. Because, to me,
I can't
the perfect
either.
Meeting of this, like, really specific millennial feeling of disillusionment with the world and disillusionment with love and this glimmer of hope. And those themes are really, I think, unique to our generation in a way that they hadn't been in, like, when we listened to music from the 60s and the 70s, and even before that. And the musical style of this song is really kind of minimalist. It is more singer-songwritery than pop punk or emo rock. And it's really, really just some of Hayley Williams's best vocal work. And actually, her lyric work. She talks about how this is the first love song she ever wrote. And really, it's the last one she ever wrote. I think on subsequent albums, she has love-ish
songs. No, that's
not true. But to me, this is the only, like, traditional love ballad that she's ever written.
Into You? Still Into You?
Into You
isn't
a love ballad. Into You is a love pop song.
No, it's Still Into
Still
You.
Into You.
Still Into You.
Okay.
Yep.
So I want to read it.
So,
can I read it?
Of course you could read it. I have a lot of, I want to be able to dissect it.
Okay.
So go read it.
So first verse, when I was younger, I saw my daddy cry and curse at the wind. He broke his own heart and I watched as he tried to reassemble it. And my mama swore that she would never let herself forget. And that was the day that I promised I'd never sing of love if it does not exist. But darling, you are the only exception. 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 I just want to point out, I did a bad reading of this because she actually places all the emphasis, like, where they sync up. She actually makes this, the meter work here really well and emphasizes it in her singing. And I just think it's really important to highlight that, even though I didn't read it correctly.
I think you read it well. So do we want to keep going or do
we
want to
dissect
first?
Let's do verse two. Maybe I know somewhere, deep in my soul, that love never lasts. And we've got to find other ways to make it alone, but keep a straight face. And I've always lived like this, keeping a comfortable distance. and up until now I had sworn to myself that I'm content with loneliness, because none of it was ever worth the risk. Well, you are the only exception. 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 I've got a tight grip on reality, but I can't let go of what's right in front of me here. I know you're leaving in the morning when you wake up. Leave me with some kind of proof it's not a dream. And then we have several repeats of "You are the only exception." And we have an outro. And I'm on my way to believing. Oh, and I'm on my way to believing.
Ow. Just so much.
I mean, like,
ow.
Honestly, like, I could cry just reading song. These lyrics.
I know, I'm getting like very emotional listening to you read it, because I can hear
right,
this singing
it like,
in my head.
Divorce that. Like, you can't do this as, you know, it's not like some other lyrics where if you could kind of like the lyrics can stand on their own. Really, you would never want these lyrics to stand on their own because of how well Hayley Williams performs it.
Yeah. So on a personal note, I can relate to this song very, very heavily, or really deeply, rather. My parents are divorced, and I can totally understand where she's coming from with that cynicism about love. And if you read interviews with her, she talks about, like, growing up, she has very vivid memories of her parents fighting and screaming at each other, and, like, that's kind of the home that she grew up in. And because of that, like, she clearly doesn't really believe in love. And I just love that slow burn of the glimmer of hope and being afraid to fall, or it's like it's right before the trust
right.
fall. And it captures that so well. And unfortunately, not to break the beautiful bubble that is this song, but this song is about her boyfriend at the time, Newfound Glory member Chad Gilbert, which that whole relationship was so problematic, but we're not going
right.
to get into that. But they were together for a very long time, and that's who this song is about. And in some terrible twist of irony, they got married and then divorced shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
So
they don't,
which makes this song, oh my God.
Yeah. And another like interesting thing about this song is, you know, a lot of people in our generation, their parents are divorced. The divorce rate was like 51% when we were teenagers amongst married couples with children.
I remember that.
And so, like, this song must have resonated with half of children in this country pretty well, because it's this real acknowledgement of, like, okay, so the whole message that we got as Disney kids was prince and princesses, which we hear about in our previous track. But here we have this really brutal image of a man cursing at the wind and a mother, and a woman, a mother, like, saying, never gonna forget this, how horrible this was.
And I will not, yeah, like, I'm not gonna forget this, and therefore I'm not gonna
right.
marry again
right.
or love again or whatever. So that's, like, her foundation of love. And you get this sense, like, in these verses that, you know, again, the irony of maybe I know somewhere deep in my soul that love never lasts, and yet she takes that chance anyway because this person is the only person that makes her want to take
right.
that chance, which is such a beautiful idea. And
yeah.
you get, like, the sense of tragedy, though, of living, like, in that distant, like, cynicism, like, to make it alone but keep a straight face. I've always lived like this, keeping a comfortable distance. And it just, even as she's singing it, and I think she does it on purpose, that she knows in a sense that this is a tragic and not great
right.
way to live. Or, and then, oh, the part that, like, gets me the most is that bridge. I've got a tight grip on reality, because she hits that, like,
yeah,
soprano.
She really gets up into her head voice.
Yeah, it's such a vulnerable delivery, and it's you get that sense of like begging, like, leave me with some kind of proof this is not a dream. Like, I need to know that you're not going anywhere.
And then to me, like, the moment that really always cinches it for me is you have this repeat of you are the only exception. And the outro is this relief moment.
Oh, God.
I'm on my way to believing. Oh, it's an acknowledgement. And I'm on my way to believing. And you have this really tiny glimmer of hope after this insistence that there is another, there's a person who might convince you to change how you feel about love.
Yeah.
And
you know what? You know what the outro reminds me of? Like, and I just realized this, Christine McVie's sentiments in You Make Loving Fun. It's that I never did believe in miracles, but I have a feeling it's time to try. I never did believe in the ways of magic, but I'm beginning to wonder why. Like, that's it. That's the outro. That's
absolutely it.
Oh, I love that. I love it so much. And again, and the with the legacy of this song, though, so just to wrap this song up, as I said, this song was Haley's song to Chad Gilbert, and then they got divorced, and Haley still performs this song, but she's now rededicated it to the fans. So this is now
for the fans. And honestly, like, she didn't sing it when we were at Boston, when I was at Boston Calling, which is a bummer. I think everyone in the whole, like, audience wanted that. But, like, people went insane when she sang Ignorance. But, like, to me, this is the song that if she sings it, she can't hear herself sing it because everyone's singing it. That's how I think how effective this song was to the audience. I mean, it's a beautiful song. I can't argue it enough. Okay, then we have our next song, Feeling Sorry. Another one that I feel like is a little bit of a lightweight on the album compared to some of the other songs.
But going back to what you and I were talking about at the top of the episode, it's so reminiscent of watching, like, people from our small town sit around with their...
It is doing nothing. So verse one, we still live in the small town, well, don't we? But I don't see you around anymore. I go to all the same places, not even a trace of you. Your days are numbered at 24. And I'm getting bored waiting around for you. We're not getting any younger, and I won't look back because there's no use. It's time to move forward. Chorus. I feel no sympathy. You live inside a cave. You barely get by. The rest of us are trying. There's no need to apologize. I've got no time for feeling sorry. Verse 2. Well, I tried not to think of what might happen when your reality, it finally cut through. Well, as for me, I got out and I'm on the road. The worst part is that this could be you. You know it too. You can't run from your shame. You're not getting any younger. Time keeps passing by, but you have it away. It's time to roll over. We have our chorus again. We have a bridge. And all the best lies, they are told with fingers tied. So cross them tight. You won't promise me tonight. If it's the last thing you do, you'll get out. And then we have our chorus again. It's like just about feeling sorry for yourself, or someone who feels sorry for themselves because they haven't done anything with their lives, and our speaker has at least tried to do something with their lives. The speaker is Haley.
And it's,
I don't know,
clearly, because like there's that whole line about like I'm on the road, I got out and I'm on the road. That's like her big thing. But she, it's essentially like about like people who want like amazing things to happen to them, like, and they don't work for it, and they just kind of sit in their house in their small town and don't grow. A lot of, again, like, you get that continuous theme of like she's growing and other people around her are not, or like she's watching her peers like stay in the same small town while she's like traveling the world and
we all know how successful that feels. We all have those friends who like they're still living in their hometowns, but they're not really doing anything, right? Like, they're not, like, doing anything around town to help the community. They're not, like, working anywhere special. But they seem, like, entitled. Or they think they're so great, you know. We all have those people that we knew in middle school and high school who are like, what is going on with them? What's their story? You know.
Right. again, high school reunion. Like, oh, you go to your high school reunion and it's like,
we didn't have one.
I know.
My high school.
You didn't have one. That stinks, but.
Well, we're past 10 years.
Oh, don't remind me. I had mine and it was a lot of like, oh, you still live in, I grew up in Vernon, New Jersey, home of like Action Park / Mountain Creek. But like I grew up there for 20 years before I moved out of there. So, but I was, by the end, I was like so desperate to move out of there. But I have a memory of like going up towards Warwick and being at a restaurant with my husband, Calvin, and this girl I knew from high school I ran into, and she walked up to me and she was like, are you still in the area? And I'm like, oh, not really. And she's like, oh, I'm still in Vernon. And God, like, don't you just love it there? And I wanted to be like, no, I don't. That's why I got out. But like, it's like that whole sentiment of like some, and you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to stay in like where you grew up. And I think it's more about the people who aren't doing
there are
anything
people
with
who
their
are,
lives.
Like that girl, obviously she loves living in Vernon, New Jersey, but like,
yeah, no, nothing against her, but I was literally like, what do you mean?
Sitting in their parents' basement, like doing nothing. Like that's what this song is about.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. For sure. Anyway, moving on to Looking Up, which is more band turmoil.
And more Christian imagery, right? Things are
more
looking
Christian
up.
Imagery,
oh, finally.
Yep.
I thought I'd never see the day. When you smile at me, we always pull through. Oh, when we try. I'm always wrong, but you're never right. Oh, never. You're never right. Honestly, can you believe we crossed the world while it's asleep? I'd never trade it in, because I've always wanted this. And it's not a dream anymore. No, it's not a dream anymore. It's worth fighting for. Could we have given up so easily? I was a few cheap shots away from the end of me, taken for granted almost everything that I have died for. Just yesterday. We have our chorus again. Verse 3. God knows the world doesn't need another band. Whoa. I wasn't sure how to say it. I couldn't remember how to sing it. But what a waste it would have been.
Yeah.
I can't believe we almost hung it up. We're just getting started. Yep, more woes.
More
in there.
Woes.
Chorus, outro. The outro is the same as the first three. So this is like a really interesting song, not because of the song itself, but the fact that the band broke up like a year after this came out. This song is basically like, you know, we get into fights, but we make up, and can you believe we're doing it? We're rock stars. And it definitely feels that way when you listen to it. But then it's like, do you know that like the band is going to change dramatically after you go on tour for this song?
Right.
And even like the woes are all of them singing. It's one of the moments where they all have like, where they're all vocalized. Yeah.
It's gang vocals.
And it's one of the few moments on the album where there's more than Haley vocalizing. So it's like a really interesting song more for the context than it is for itself.
I mean, reading interviews with Haley around this time, she was saying that this is one of the last tracks written for the album. And it like was clearly that, oh my gosh, we're in a amazing place now. And it's blatantly, it can't be about anything else with the band. Like, it's not about a relationship. It's not about God. It's literally about the band, because like you have references. Can you believe we crossed the world while it's asleep? That's like referencing their touring, and just marveling at like what they're doing. God knows the world doesn't need another band, but what a waste it would have been. I can't believe we almost hung it up. We're just getting started, because this is literally like
their
third album. Like,
and second album with this
they're
band
technically like a
like these members,
right? And she's just marveling that like, oh my god, we're in such a good place now. But even like listening to this now, it feels so forced.
You can say that again.
Yeah, it feels very forced. But I don't know if it's just because of what we know now after what happened. I want to think that maybe she like kidded herself into thinking things were fine. I think it's also just
a pump-up track, but... right? Like, you need to have that on the album at some point. Yeah. It's like a track that's like, yeah, we're a great band. Please listen to us and buy our records.
It sounds very...
We're fine, really.
Right. It does sound very jubilant. Yeah. We're fine, really. Forced smile here. It is a very jubilant track, but then we move on to Where the Lines Overlap, which is about her long-distance relationship with Chad. Yeah. Which, yeah, that's what she said it was about. So let's
take a look at that one. Do you want to read it?
Where the Lines Overlap. Verse 1. Give me attention. I need it now. Too much distance to measure it out loud. Tracing patterns across a personal map and making pictures where the lines overlap, where the lines overlap. Chorus. No one is as lucky as us. We're not at the end yet, but we already won. No one is as lucky as us, Call me over and tell me how well you got so far. Never making a single sound. I'm not used to it, but I can learn. Now I've got a feeling if I sang this loud enough, you would sing it back to me. And then it goes back into the chorus. So I think at first glance this can be about the band, but it really is like once you deep dive into it that it's about long-distance relationship.
You know, I think definitely when you listen to this track, those lines that you would sing it back to me, that had to be like a concert moment, right? Because like I'm sure the audience was singing it back to her.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
And I fully believe that they wrote it that way to be this like concert, this audience participation moment.
Oh, for sure.
But I think that's I don't have that much else to say about this song.
Right. I mean, it calls back to looking up, though, because like no one is as lucky as us. Like that's, I think of the band when I hear that line, but like I'm just looking at it, you know, like the world doesn't need the other band, like we could have hung it up. It's like very parallel to that, that no one is as lucky as us. Like how could I let that go? That it's even though it's about a long distance relationship, I still feel like that calls back to the band and how she feels about the band.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it really, it supports the next song, Misguided Ghosts, which is a very different song.
Which is such a bare bones.
It's a soft acoustic very bare bones. Where it's really like Hayley Williams is singing about like her place in the world, in the band, and she metaphorizes herself as like this misguided ghost. So I'll read the verse for us. I'm going away for a while, but I'll be back. Don't try and follow me. Because I'll return as soon as possible, see him trying to find my place. But it might not be here where I feel safe. We all learn to make mistakes. And run from them, with no direction. We'll run from them, with no conviction. Because I'm just one of these ghosts traveling endlessly, don't need no roads. In fact, they follow me, and we just go in circles. Verse 2. Well, now I'm told that this is life. And pain is just a simple compromise. So we can get what we want out of it and someone care to classify our broken hearts and twisted minds so I can find someone to rely on. Pre-chorus too. And run to them, full speed ahead. Oh, you're not useless. We are just misguided ghosts traveling endlessly. The ones we trust the most pushed us far away. And there's no road, and we should not be the same. But I'm just a ghost, and still try echo me. And they echo me in circles. So what do you think?
Band turmoil! Lots of band turmoil. This is like, I'm taking a break and trying to figure out my place in the world, because this is probably the most bleak band breakup song on here. Like it speaks to how she's haunted by these issues, which makes her, I guess, the metaphor for her being a ghost fits very well here, that no matter where she goes, these issues follow her. She's can't haunted escape them.
To the point of being the haunter.
Right, exactly. And this song, because it's so bare bones, it's just her voice and a guitar. That's all it is. And even as you're reading it, I think this is the closest song on the album to a poem. Like, this seems more like a poem than a song. And I think maybe that's how it started. Like, I can easily see this being how it started, or like a diary entry that turned into a song. But you just get this sense that she is just not able to escape the issues within the band, and she's kind of trying to come to terms with the fact, like, maybe the band cannot be, and what does that mean for her? Absolutely. What is her place in this world? She has no map, she has no guidance, no compass, no nothing. So she's just a ghost until she comes to that conclusion.
Yeah.
And that's all I really had to say about it. Did you have anything else?
I really want to get on to the last song, because this one is like, oh my God.
Oh God.
This song is really incredible.
This one hurts a lot. This is
one of the best on the album.
Can I please read this?
Yeah, but we should say what it is. So the last track is All I Wanted. This song, I think, made it into the public sphere because it was either in a movie, or I remember it maybe being in a trailer for a movie. But I'll explain my personal connection to this song in a minute, but go ahead and read it.
Okay, and then we'll both talk about our personal connections. Okay. Oh, here. How about, since it's the last track, we can alternate. I'll read verses and you read...
Just read it.
Or I guess I'll just read it. Never mind, because it's just verse and chorus. Sorry. You got it. You got it, babe. Okay. Verse one. Think of me when you're out there. I'll beg you nice from my knees. And when the world treats you way too fairly, well, it's a shame I'm a dream. And chorus is just, all I wanted was you.
If you haven't heard this song in a while,
not yet.
You're right.
Not yet. It's still very quiet and it's mournful. So I'm just going to say, she says it very quiet and very mournfully. All I wanted was you. All I wanted was you. Verse two. I think I'll pace my apartment a few times and fall asleep on the couch. Wake up early to black and white reruns that escaped from my mouth. Oh. And then chorus is now the all I wanted was you, and it's repeated four times. And that's when it starts to get loud and screamy and vulnerable. And then verse three is oh my god, I'm like getting emotional like before I read this. Okay. I would follow you to the beginning and just to relive the start. And maybe then we'll remember to slow down at all of our favorite parts. And then the chorus is all I wanted was you five times, just screaming. And then that last all I wanted was you is all I wanted was you. And that's how it ends. That's how it ends.
So, I want to talk.
All right, go ahead, Jeffrey. You tell your tale.
I want to talk about, like, this song to me was like an expression of like gay rage, of like, I am a like single gay person who had like no exposure to gay people, and then went to college and was just like, please, all I wanted was you. It was this like just general you of like this like exasperation, this frustration with connection. And I think that's really one of the core themes of this song, is like this like extreme like frustration that the communication can't happen. And I know there's like some sexual imagery in here, but I want to drive the point home that like this song isn't just about like a personal connection. It can't be. It's also about this band connection and this idea of like being the band. And Hayley Williams's projection into stardom is All I Wanted Was You is like this you that is not traced, is this you who is not specified.
Right. I just think it's the most gut-wrenching.
And it's all in her vocals, right? These are pretty benign lyrics. Like, you reading them, like, we're not like crying here, but us remembering her sing this is like, it's so incredibly gut-wrenching.
I have this like feeling in the pit. I had this feeling in the pit of my stomach as I was reading it, because I could hear it in my head. And as I'm reading it, I'm flashing back to the first semester, like freshman year of college. Like, I was like absolutely, if you look at my transcript, girl, like you watch my grades, like go.
Girl, me too.
Oh God. Like you watch my grades, like I was doing really well, and then all of a sudden, like I started like doing not super poorly, like I was like different. But I was skating by, and I failed one of, yeah, it was different, and I was really struggling with like depression, like my breakup from with my high school boyfriend. He at this point had moved on to somebody else, and that was like really hard to watch. And this song, I was like in my room, like crying, like listening to this song, like, yes, Haley, I know, yeah, what it means. But there's that sentiment though, like, I'll beg you nice from my knees, like it's just pitiful. It's so pitiful of that, like, I don't even care how it looks right now, like I'm just gonna like beg for you to come back, like, or not even come back, like I just want you to think of me, like at the very base, just think of me. And she just very simply traces that path of post breakup sadness, like pacing when you can't even sleep on your bed, like you just fall asleep on the couch with the TV on, like she references the black and white reruns. And again, that verse 3 is my favorite though, where you want to relive it so you can like revel in the good times, or you want to go back and like go through it again so you can like relish in what you had. It's just so poignant. It's so simple but poignant.
It's beautiful. It's a beautifully harsh song.
And again, that the last part where she's just like, it goes from quiet to like screaming, all I wanted was you. You get it. Yeah. Oh,
I just think, anyway, it's like such an incredible song to end this incredible album. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So are we ready to close the book on Brand New Eyes?
We are absolutely ready to close the book on Brand New Eyes. So after Brand New Eyes, shit really hit the fan. It's the best. Which, I mean, is the best the way I can put it.
That's literally what happened.
So, well, literally, that's what happened?
Literary. Anyway.
Anyway, onward ho.
After they had done the tour for this album, the Faro brothers left the band by posting a blog post, reportedly on Blogger, but also on the band's website. And the band had been talking about them leaving, so Haley Williams had known about it, and the other members of the band had known about that they were considering leaving. But the posts on the websites were surprises to them that they were definitively leaving the band. And there was a lot of drama. It was a big, big news story. Like, it actually made, like, actual TV news.
I remember it.
That the band was going to be changing. There was this belief that the band was splitting up. Haley Williams at the time had a statement that, like, they weren't splitting up and that there was going to be more music. I watched the interview that they did with MTV a few years later in 2012 when they had a new album coming out, where Jeremy Davis and Taylor York and Haley Williams talked about, like, how, you know, this was like a really odd thing for them to do. They thought that they were moving towards an amicable breakup of the band, but then the Faro brothers left. And I know that you have some of that post you want to read.
Yeah. So essentially it's a very long post. I won't read the whole thing. I just want to read what they essentially say about Brand New Eyes and how they felt about it. But the gist of the post was like, Haley released a statement about the Faro brothers leaving, and essentially in the post they're like, Haley released the statement without our permission, and we wanted to issue our own statement, and we wanted to work out like a agreement with Haley, and it didn't happen the way we wanted, so here's our story. And they kind of go into the history of the band, and then they just essentially like just shit talk Haley and like just say like how it became all about her and like how the manager like was like promoting her and it wasn't really about the band. It was like Haley plus Paramore, and Haley was the only one who signed the contract and yada yada yada. So it just goes into how the band was like fracturing, and I'm gonna now get to the part where they talk about Brand New Eyes. Once we finished touring on Riot, we came home for a break and started writing for Brand New Eyes. Haley presented lyrics to us that were really negative and we didn't agree with. For example, the truths never set me free, which contradicts what the Bible says in John 8:32, and you shall know the truth and the truth shall set you free. We fought her about how her lyrics misrepresented our band and what we stood for, but in the end she got her way. Instead of fighting her any longer, we decided to just roll over and let it go. Haley claimed that this record reunited us as a band and made us grow closer together, when in reality we were all growing further apart. Suddenly, the band had split into two sides. Touring became more difficult since we couldn't agree on anything. The friendships our band once had were no longer existent. Amos 3:3 says, "Can two people walk together without agreeing on the direction?" In addition to the band turmoil, touring had really taken its toll on us both. We left home at such a young age and missed taking part in normal teenage years. When you own part of a band and are constantly playing, you make sacrifices. Touring has taken its toll on our family members as well. I specifically remember many moments where our parents would break down in tears when we had to leave. It broke my heart. Seeing our siblings grow up so much during our absences was never easy either. So then that's really like towards the end of the statement. They were like, we came to the decision to leave the band because of all this, and we love you. If music was God calls us to in the future, we hope that you all will be a part of it. Josh and Zach. That's really it. So, yeah, a lot of bad blood.
And then
just a lot of bad blood.
They had left the band a few years later. Jeremy Davis sued the band Paramore, which at that time was just Taylor York and Haley Williams. They later settled, and he left the band. The current band is now Haley Williams, Taylor York, and actually Zach Farrow returned to the band for After Laughter. But as the band stands, really, Haley Williams is doing solo work. Zach Farrow isn't really, like, doing the band right now, and so that leaves Taylor York being Paramore. I'm sure that...
I was gonna say, and Haley Williams posted, like, a super shady tweet about Josh Farrow that it was essentially, like, calling him a homophobe. Like, and she was like, that's why there's only, like, one Farrow in the band or something. I have to pull up the... tweet. So you keep talking while I pull up
okay.
the tweet.
So yeah, it's a really fractured band, and the sound of Paramore changed dramatically since this album. Their subsequent album, Paramore, Jeremy Davis, Taylor York, Haley Williams, very different sound, but really good sound. And then After Laughter, again, a little bit more pop, less punk, really showing off Haley Williams' voice some more. And then Haley Williams has an upcoming solo album.
Yes. Or no, her solo album came out. It was called Petals for Armor. Oh, okay, so here's the tweet. She said on October 28th, 2020, "There's a reason there are only three people left in Paramore. Surprise, haters, it ain't because of me. Paramore do not condone religiously, politically dogmatic beliefs which leave our LGBTQ plus friends, fans, and family feeling abandoned and hopeless. And you know, if that doesn't jive with you, well, feel free to go where all past members of Paramore have gone, which is literally anywhere else but Paramore."
Good for her. Who knows who that wow. could be anyone, though. That's not necessarily.
No, that's Josh.
All right, cool.
No, it's Josh Farrow.
That's all right.
Yeah. So apparently, well, he's like posted like homophobic and
which is probably why he doesn't
things,
have a career despite being a really
media.
Good musician. Like, he has nothing. really, like, none of the band members that have left Paramore have like gone on to like be great solo artists. They've, you know, some of them have like played in other bands, or they've been played like on touring bands. Taylor York toured with other bands while Paramore wasn't really a thing. But like, it's just another moment like Fleetwood Mac, where we have really good music that ends really badly. So that's Paramore's Brand New Eyes. A just really interesting album. The title comes from this idea that they were like growing into adults, and seeing the world through new eyes. The album cover is...
And seeing each other through brand new eyes, too.
And the album cover is of a butterfly with its wings removed. And Hayley Williams wrote somewhere on the internet that the image came from, like, seeing, like, actually seeing this, like, in at her mother's house. Someone had done this to a butterfly, and she related to it. So it's an interesting album. It's one of our, like, growing up albums. But I'd like to announce the next one, which I know is traditionally your job.
Of course.
But I'd really like to announce it.
That's fine. You go ahead. The floor is yours, sir.
We're a little late to the party with this one, I'll admit. But our recording schedule and our release schedule are a little different. But I'm very excited to announce, for the 10th anniversary of this legendary album, another album that we grew to love in college, Lady Gaga's Born This Way.
Legendary. It was her gateway, I think, into her absolute superstardom.
Very excited.
So excited. And with that, we will close out this episode. So thank you guys so much for listening. We will catch you on the flip side.